Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going, run a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick her on his choke course. But it's no holds barred, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is up, everybody? It's your boy, We Too Deep. We are back with another episode of the Slappin' Mead Wrestling Podcast. This time we're going to go over Crown Jewel, and being that we won't have an episode this upcoming Tuesday, as already previously explained, kind of had this in the bag of, like, you know, Friday I said, you know, Friday's episode was probably the last one for a few weeks, with the idea that if I liked Crown Jewel enough to want to do a show, I would do it and sort of pop it in and surprise you guys with it, like I always do in the PLEs, right? Now, not every single PLE gets one, but this one I thought there were some thoughts of the show that I did want to talk about. I'm not going to talk about the whole show, no pre-show, no post-show stuff, none of that, right? So the first thing is I watched this on replay, literally just watched it today, Sunday. Afterwards, you know, I worked during Saturday while it was on and wasn't really necessarily in a place to where I could just sit there and watch it without interruption. And so I did watch it, and I'll have to say, right, watching the show essentially alone, like I've gotten so used to watching wrestling with the casual wrestling community on Discord, right, and not having that interaction during parts of the show, it made it a little bit longer than what wrestling feels like at times, right? And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I also have to say, it also allowed me to solely pay attention to the actual show, because for a lot of times there's this in the Discord. These are wonderful conversations we have, but a lot of times what tends to happen is if the product on the TV isn't necessarily the most entertaining, I go to the Discord to be entertained, and I miss the parts of it, right? And so this gave me an opportunity to actually watch and formulate my own opinion, right? I think that there's a sort of specific match that happened yesterday that I feel like had I watched it live with the Discord, I'd have a different opinion. That's the Fatal 4-Way Women's Tag Team Championship match. And when we talk about that, I'll talk about what... Basically, I loved that match, and we'll talk about why I loved it in a minute. I feel my overall feeling from the Discord, or from the limited amount of conversation that happened during the show, was that wasn't a crowd favorite for at least the casual wrestling Discord, right? And I actually found that match, and I have a hot take on it. I got a couple hot takes from the show. I got a hot take on that match. And many of you might think I'm crazy for saying it, but we'll go over that in a second. Before we break down Crown Jewel, though, as always, links are in the description to join the Junkyard Media Group at Discord. That's the Junkyard Media Group, for those who don't know. That's essentially something my brother Junkyard James created, and me, him, and my friend Cody, we sort of, it's not like an official thing. We don't make money with it per se, but it's sort of the conglomeration of us together. And so the Junkyard Media Group Discord is where these episodes get posted, as well as my brother and my and K-Dawg Cody stuff gets posted as well, the Beyond the Junkyard podcast and reaction show. And so that Discord link, so when I talk about the casual wrestling Discord, that's a completely different Discord. That's the casual wrestling community show hosted by Notorious Nerdy D. That's his Discord. And we share a similar audience between the two Discords. And so I do mention it from time to time. Join that one as well. Go to his channel. So show some love, support his show. And if you haven't already, right. And so that Discord link in the description, as well as our affiliate links through the WWE Shop and Expedia. All those links are in the description, as well as the link to the Junkyard Media Group YouTube page, where you can find the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. All right, now that the housekeeping's done, let's get through this show. Let's start with my overall thoughts, right? So overall thoughts, I'm going to go ahead and say, and this is going to be the first hot take. I thought the overall show was, I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8 out of 10. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. And I call that a hot take because, you know, I'm in the casual wrestling, right? There's Discord. We got some people saying, you know, it's a 6, maybe a 5, right? And I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8. I thought it was a highly entertaining PLE. I think there were some moments that really slowed it down for me that made it what could have been, you know, it could have been like a 9 or a 10, because I thought that there were moments in the show that were really good, but certain moments really, really ruined that rating for me. We'll talk about those in a minute. Yeah, but I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8. I think an 8, it may be a little bit high, but let's talk about why I'll give it an 8. So let's start with the negative. Well, let's start with the negatives, and then we'll get to the positives. So the things that I thought were really bad, or not really really bad, but negatives of the show, would be the Triple Threat U.S. title match had no intended purpose. And watching that match, had no care in the world for that match, already came in sort of pre-biased, not caring about that match. And then seeing LA Knight win, I'm beyond with you, I fast-forwarded through that match and then just waited for it to end. Had no care in the world of watching that match. And so I don't think it needed to be on the card. LA Knight is a, I'm going to be honest with you, he's just a bad champion, right? He's worn off. There's LA Knight fatigue, I believe, in the fan base. I'm tired of seeing LA Knight. I would love to see, like, Carmelo Hayes could have won that title and then rejuvenated that division with a whole bunch of new matchups. That would be decent, right? Because LA Knight's not the greatest wrestler, right? And the idea of the U.S. title, to me, especially since he's like a babyface, should be that he's challenging and defending that title every single night. There should be an open challenge. And I feel this way about all of the mid-card titles, right? So the Intercontinental Championship, the U.S. title, the North American Championship, the Women's North American Champion. I feel like all of them should have open challenges frequently. Doesn't have to be every week, but frequently they should have open challenges and defend that title. And it shouldn't necessarily, it should be the, like the Workmen's Championship, sort of the best wrestlers, right? And to me, that's not LA Knight. And so that belt needs to get off of him, because I could give absolutely zero fucks about that title. At least with Logan Paul, we could use the idea that he was a celebrity, he was a heel, and he felt like he was bigger than the brand and didn't have to defend the title except for when he decided to, right? With LA Knight, right, the whole idea was he's a baby face, the crowd loves him, he should defend it more, and instead we're getting best of seven series that that get zero completion to that story because the seventh match ends up with interference by LA Knight, and then LA Knight ends up retaining the title anyway at the payoff, right? So there's zero payoff to the last 2 months because of, for whatever reason, right? Then another, what I would say a negative would be the Cody Gunther match, in that it was a good match, wasn't great, wasn't the banger that I thought it would be. It was just long as fuck, dude. Right, and this is my issue with, like, because this felt like an AEW style match. Well, they'll just give you these long ass matches. But see, the difference with AEW is, like, for Crown Jewel, this felt really like the only long drawn out match, right? Whereas AEW would give you 8 back to back to back, right? But this being at the end of the show, there's crowd fatigue involved. You're not really fighting for anything in particular other than being like the Crown Jewel champion. And we'll talk about that title here in a minute. But the match was good. I'm not going to hate on the match. It was really good. It was just like 10 minutes too long to me. Like 10 minutes too long of a match, to where I got to a point where I looked, I was like, how much longer is left in this show? And there was about 12 minutes left in the show. And if you take away the fact that they spent about 2.5 minutes, a little bit longer than that, in the ring with getting doing photo ops with Cody that they showed on the screen, that match just went real, real, real long, right? Outside of that, though, I don't have a lot of negatives, right? I don't have a lot of negatives. So let's talk about what many people were kind of upset about, that Randy Orton and Kevin Owens didn't actually have a match. The match got waved off. But guys, this thing, that segment, because I'm going to call it a segment now because it wasn't officially a match, that segment did a very good job at setting up the rest of the year. So what you'll do is you'll get a match in a month at Survivor Series in Canada. Kevin Owens can get the win here, right? Kevin Owens can get the win. And then when you get to Long Island, Randy Orton can win at Saturday Night Main Event, can win essentially like the rubber match, which then can either set up a match with... Because what we see here is we're starting to sort of see like the ultimate turn where like Randy Orton snapped in this match, where like he went back to like 09 Randy Orton, right? Where like he wanted to kill somebody, right? And so I think this is the slow transition of getting Randy Orton in that mindset to fight Cody Rhodes, right? I think that's where we're headed. So I thought that this segment accomplished a lot. This gets Randy Orton into heel Randy Orton, where he can go against Cody at Royal Rumble, and then we can go from there, whether it's Cena next for Orton or who not. But I think Cody's next. I also think this could be a very good way to suspend Kevin Owens, potentially fire Kevin Owens. I mean, you could do like a match in Canada, have Kevin Owens win that one, and then have Kevin continue to like attack Randy, and then at Saturday Night Main Event have like a loser leaves WWE match where Randy wins and Kevin has to leave WWE, and that could be their way of writing him off TV. I still think there's a shot that he's not long term in the company and he's going to AEW. However, I could also see that this is a storyline showing that he's going to stay. I don't know. At this point, I don't have any info. I don't have any, you know, behind-the-scenes sources. I'm not here really to break news. I'm just here to give my opinion. I just think Kevin Owens, until there's an actual, like, press release, and this is my thing with, like, wrestling contracts, this is why I don't believe that there's an actual free agency in wrestling. Or like an actual, like a lot of people will claim that like WWE poaches talent. I don't believe that you can poach talent if their contract situation isn't public knowledge. That's just my opinion. And contract information in terms of like how long someone signed to a brand and how much money they're making and how long the contract extensions are, that's not public knowledge. Like I can go right now to overthecap.com and look at the current cap situation for each NFL team. And see, okay, well, this player on so-and-so is signed for the next 8 years making this much money, and it's public information that we can find. WWE doesn't work that way. Wrestling doesn't work that way. We don't have the ability to find that information. So until someone absolutely confirms 100% that Kevin Owens is signed long-term, in whatever way they can do that, I still think that there's a – right? Because a lot of people – felt this way about Ricochet that, oh, no, this is just a big story with him and Bron Breakker. He'll come back, right? And I even was sucked into that okay, Ricochet is going to come back, win the IC title from Bron Breakker, right? And obviously that didn't work out. I still think there's a very good shot Kevin Owens can end up in AEW at some point down the line in the next year or so. So I thought that segment was really good. I thought it set up a situation where both of these wrestlers are probably going to be either fined or suspended in some way, shape, or form for some extended period of time. I think at Survivor Series, you can get a no DQ match or something, but ultimately setting up the final match in Long Island at Saturday Night Main Event, I think that's where this ends. Ultimately with Randy being the winner and Randy then going back to the source of what started that feud, which was Cody Rhodes saying, hey, Cody, you're the cause of this. I want you next. So then at Royal Rumble, we can get Cody versus Randy. And whether Randy wins the title or not, I don't care. There's a good opportunity to put Randy as champion, have Cena win the Rumble the same night, and then have Cena versus Orton in a situation where Cena can then win the title off of Orton to beat the record, right? I like that. I like that booking. And then have Cena basically be champion for 6 months while he, you know, and then whoever beats him for the belt essentially is the one who retires, John Cena. I like that idea, right? The next match that I want to talk about real quick is Bronson Reed versus Seth Rollins. I told you guys on the prediction show, right, on Tuesday, Wavy D picked Bronson Reed, and I said, I know how this works. I know how this booking works with Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins doesn't come back to lose, right? Seth Rollins is going over solely because I've seen this story enough where if you're in a feud with Seth Rollins, you're probably losing the first match. Right. But ultimately what this is going to do is now I'm going to be honest with you. They're filming Raw as we speak. I haven't seen any of the spoilers, so I don't know any information. Right. So if this comes true, I'm 100% with you. I haven't seen any of the spoilers. I've been too busy watching Crown Jewel to pay attention to the actual spoilers for the Raw taping. And I say that because I believe what happens at this Fatal 4-Way number one contenders match on Raw, which is Seth Rollins, Sheamus, Dominic, and Damian, I think Rollins is going to be attacked by Bronson Reed, right? And I think that continues this feud into Survivor Series, again, possibly doing something that ends at Saturday Night Main Event, where Bronson Reed ultimately will go over on Seth Rollins. But this match right here told us a little bit more of a story, right? So why is Seth Rollins angry at Bronson Reed? Well, Seth Rollins is angry at Bronson Reed because Seth Rollins got taken out for an extended period of time because of the massive amount of tsunamis that were given to him, right? So Seth Rollins, how does he win the match? Essentially, by giving 1.5 million stomps on Bronson Reed, right? And so that, to me, that was what the story of this match was. And then it continues to set up. Like, Bronson Reed, still not down. You still can't defeat him. You may have beat him, but they still got Bronson Reed over in defeat, and that he still looks like a beast coming out of this match. And so, very good job. They made both look like superstars. Ultimately, I think Bronson Reed's going to go over in this feud, one that I do believe ends by the end of the year. As you try to position Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed into a position at Royal Rumble, where Bronson Reed feels like a sleeper for the Royal Rumble. I believe, if I look towards Royal Rumble, he feels like a sleeper to me. I don't think he's going to win it, but he feels like a sleeper. He feels like this is a feud that can elevate Bronson Reed into that main event picture. It's going to need some more characters for Gunther once Gunther's done with, you know, ultimately, like, because I imagine it was going to be Braun Breaker, but he's now back in the IC title picture. So I imagine Braun Breaker, maybe, I still think Braun Breaker's winning the Rumble if it's not John Cena. But I think Gunther could lose the title, and I would love to see like a Bronson Reed beat him for the title I believe Gunther's going to transition into being the one that retires Goldberg. Just personally. So I like the match. Wasn't the best, but it was very good at accomplishing what I believe it wanted to accomplish. We'll talk about the women's Crown Jewel title match. Very good storytelling. I'm 100% convinced now Tiffany Stratton's winning the title in Milwaukee. I was like 50-50 going into the show. Like, if she doesn't cash in here, we could possibly wait a little bit. But the teasing is done, right? Nia Jax is like officially over with Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany's came out during this and essentially was about to cash in. And then Nia was like, this isn't the plan. It's too early. The wrong time. Leave, right? And just having a whole panic attack on her, right? Like, just screaming at her, leave the arena type thing, right? So I definitely think this upcoming Friday's in Buffalo, the next Friday's in Milwaukee. I 100% expect Tiffany Stratton, because this Friday will essentially be like this Friday will be used to set up the cash in, right? So it's Nia Jax coming in and talking to Tiffany like, you're the reason I lost. Had you not come out, had you not thought about yourself and tried to steal the show, I would have won that ring, right? And so I think next week in Buffalo will set it up. And then the 15th in Milwaukee, she's turning. She's turning in it for her home crowd. I 100% expect it to happen. We'll be 100% surprised if it doesn't happen. I'm going to go on the limb in predicting that Tiffany Stratton will be women's champion on November the 15th when they leave Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 100% expect it to happen. Outside of that, the match itself was good. Again, some more storytelling going on here with you know, my question that I have is, with Rhea out, and I'm sure we'll address this on Raw, what's the future for Liv? Who's her next opponent? Because we can't have Liv just, like, not be on the show with an opponent heading into, like, War Games, right? And so that's a good question for me that I want answered in the next week or two. Like, what's next for Liv? Now that Rhea's out with that broken orbital bone, right? Another thought, just before we get to the first two matches of this card were my favorite two. I think I would have essentially ran this card in reverse. I would have started with Gunther and Cody, then done the U.S. title match, then done Owens and Orton, then done Liv and Nia, and then done the women's tag, and then ended with Bloodline versus New Bloodline. I would have essentially ran the card in reverse, right? Personally, if it was my opinion. Just another overall thought that I had on the show that I haven't said yet is just some of the crowd shots that they were panning to just were cool to see, right? Understanding the sort of like political aspect of WWE even being here in Saudi Arabia, whether or not you agree with like the government of Saudi Arabia. And that's a whole other show, not something we're not going to cover on this show. I don't necessarily, if you think it's blood money or whatever you think, right? It's really cool to see a group of people who historically have not been able to have these type of events enjoy life, right? And to have the type of, like, and I don't want to make, like, a big political statement here, but WWE, like, a lot of people in that Middle Eastern region would see it as, like, the West invading traditional culture. And whether or not you agree with that or not, it's just really cool to see people, you know, especially with the next match we're going to talk about, which is the women's tag match. The crowd was really weak. Like, they weren't into the match at all, right? But it's expected because of the culture of the host arena, where there's not much respect pushed onto women's athletics. But seeing that Saudi Arabia is open to it, and then seeing some of the panning through the crowd of the little girls in the arena or the women in the arena that were just eating this match up, right? That's cool to me. So whatever you feel about the politics of WWE being in Saudi Arabia, seeing those moments are awesome. I don't think people understand the change that WWE can initiate in a culture, right? And I'm not saying Saudi Arabia is like something we should strive to be like, right? There's still some things they do over there that are like questionable things. But from a show perspective, and that's why I always say, like, I don't let the crowd affect what I see on the actual show, right? Because, for an example, like, if you watch this and the crowd during the women's matches was kind of weak, and if you let the crowd affect how you view the show, you view it differently, right? And so understanding where they're at, the reasons why for a lot they felt disconnected during the women's matches, there was you understand it a little bit more, right? But just seeing some of the crowd shots and seeing the little kids in the front row and the women throughout the arena that they would pan to, just seeming like they're actually enjoying life. That's really cool to see as someone who, you know, I think us in the West, whether you're listening in like Europe, like civilized Europe, Britain, Germany, France, Italy, right, Australia, or you listen, or you're one of the more common viewers of the show, if you're living in like North America, Canada, Mexico, United States, right? The West, like, if you live in Western civilization, like, we're sort of blessed, and we take a lot of the things we, especially here in the United States, a lot of the freedoms that we have, we take a lot of them for granted. So when you go to a culture like Saudi Arabia, where you understand that this is like the relationship with WWE is really opening up a thing that didn't exist 10 years ago, right? This doesn't happen 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so it's just really cool to see people who don't have the same freedoms as us having a genuine experience with the product that we all love, right? And so that's that. So let's talk about the women's fatal four-way. Here's the hot take. Best match of the night. Best match of the night. And it's a hot take because I've seen some of the discussion around it where some were like, oh, that match was pretty bad, right? You know, if you – some will say, like, it's abysmal. It's, you know, it was a bad – look, it's not like the perfect X's and O match. I 100% agree with that. But it was fun. I think for me, I watched it a little differently. So, like, my note on this is, like, what do people see in damage control that I don't see? Why are we – like they – to me, those – that was the weakest team in the group. Like, I understand Chelsea and Piper, right? They're sort of the comedy group of the four, right? Bianca and Jade were on their shit, right? And they did their – they did good. Like, they're queens. And 100% knew that coming into it, right? But let me tell you something. And this may just be a little biased because I am an NXT fan. But Metaphor took this opportunity. Metaphor, Jakara Jackson, and Lash Legend – took this opportunity, their first main roster PLE, they took the opportunity, and I felt they were the best performers of the night. In terms of, they could have just gone in there and just been the jobbers, right? And then gone back to NXT. But no, they took this opportunity, they showed out, they put on a show. I felt like they had the least amount of expectation going into it, and they put on the best show, right? I expect a lot of what I saw from Bianca and Jade. I still don't understand damage control. I knew what we were gonna get with Chelsea and Piper, right? And again, Jakara and Lash could have been just that group that came in, got beat up a little bit, and didn't really do much. But they came in, they put on a show, and you really got yourself over. Now, I ultimately expect this to be one of two things coming out of this match. This either sets up War Games, where it's Chelsea, Piper, and Damage Control, versus Jakara Jackson and Bianca and Jade, or this leads into what I would prefer, which is Jakara and Lash versus Bianca and Jade for the Women's Tag Team Championship, which could set up a really cool feud where Bianca and Jade are NXT a lot more, and I like that feud as well, and so I'm interested to see where that's going. This was my favorite match of the night, and I just felt overall like I don't see where people are getting abysmal or bad from this match. I had a lot of fun watching this match. It was highly entertaining. There were spots that were fun. Nothing ended up being botched. You know, reading that chat going into it, I thought, okay, maybe there was like a botched spot or something. Immediately thought it was EO because that's who typically botches these spots. But I didn't see a reason to hate the match or take points away from the overall grade. If tag team wrestling or women's tag team wrestling isn't your thing, I get it. I personally want to know, like, what's a reason to say that this match wasn't good, right? And then overall, the main thing I watched for was Roman versus Solo, like Team Roman versus Team Solo. And this is what I want to spend a little bit of time talking about, which is the meta story of Roman Reigns, right? Because there's like levels to this bloodline story now. So you got the what's presented in front of us, right? You got the 2D image that's in front of us. So Team Solo versus Team Roman are essentially who's the actual tribal chief, Solo versus Roman, right? So that's the 2D image that anyone who takes a look at the product can see, right? but you have other dimensions behind the story, right? So maybe you've just been a fan short term, and now it maybe just for the length of maybe not just the maybe you've been a fan for like less than 5 years, and only thing you know is the Bloodline story, right? And so that's the 3D dimension, right? But then you got to go into like the 4D dimension, right? Of the meta story, the long-term story of Roman Reigns, right? And so, right, and from Bloodline Roman Reigns to now, that's your 4D. But you got to go even more meta. You got to go into the fifth dimension, right? Where if you're a fan like me who've been watching for 10, 15 years and you've seen Roman Reigns from the debut of Roman Reigns, there's a story being told from that fifth dimension that is better than what we're or is deeper than what we're actually seeing. Right? There's a story there that's deeper than what you could see at the 2D image. You got to look in the fifth dimension, right? So you have the third dimension, which is just the overall Bloodline story, where it's Roman, Bloodline, what his relationship to the actual Bloodline, and that, right? But what I mean by like the fifth dimension is the whole story of Roman Reigns, right? If you go back to the beginning, Roman Reigns was essentially, he was in the Shield, right? And his role in the Shield was essentially the guy who, and he was cheered for a while in the Shield, right? And, but he didn't have to talk. He didn't have to do a lot of wrestling. He was protected. And so when the Shield broke and Dean Ambrose left, he was the mouthpiece of the group. Seth could talk as well, but right, Seth left, his protection was gone. And then he was thrusted into the main event scene to be the next John Cena. And the crowd didn't react to him well. The crowd booed him. They basically wanted him out of the company. They wanted him nowhere near the main event scene. They called him trash, right? The crowd rejected him, right? And the only thing he ever wanted was what? The affirmation of the fan base. And WWE tried everything. Rock tried to come out. Didn't work. Right? And so he leaves. He comes out and he gets cheered a little bit because of the cancer that his leukemia came back. And so he announces that. And then I still remember the night he came back and said, bro, I beat cancer's ass. I'm in remission, right? Because I was bawling my ears out. My eyes are bawling my ears out. I can't talk apparently today. I was bawling my eyes out because Roman Reigns from the jump was my favorite wrestler, right? Like I've been on Team Roman from the beginning, right? And he's back and he's cheered a little bit, right? But then it goes into like succotash Roman Reigns, right? That 2018 Roman Reigns that just no one really cared about, and he was eating dog food, and right. And then the pandemic hit, and he disappeared again, out of fear of his health, right? So then he comes back, and that's when the Bloodline starts, right? And he comes back, and the whole reason of Acknowledge Me was he wanted one thing, and that is the acknowledgement of the fans. And eventually, over 4 years, he gets it. And what do we start getting? We want Roman. We want Roman. But notice, this is where you get into like the third dimension of like what the Bloodline story is. Notice when he came back, what he had to do, right? What he had to do was he had to instill into Jimmy and Jay submission and loyalty to Roman Reigns, right? I'm the guy. I'm the leader. I'm the guy in control. You guys are just, you're going to be my, for lack of a better term, my servants. You're going to do whatever I tell you to do, right? And so he had to, he had to beat that into Jay. His first feud as this heel Roman Reigns was against who? It was against Jey Uso. He had to beat that into Jay. And then Jimmy came back. And Jimmy didn't really buy it, but so he had to be beaten into him. Right? And so now we get to 2, 3, 4 years into this story. And what we've done over the last year and a half is Roman's just been forsaken. Jay left him. Jay went to go do his own thing. Sammy betrayed him. Jimmy has been really the only one that's not stopped acknowledging him. And then now Solo's turned on him. And so he's in this battle, this sort of tribal warfare of who's actually the tribal chief. And the win, because he doesn't have an army around him, because Solo's come in, and this goes to my biggest hot take of the night. The Solo-led bloodline is the best version of the bloodline. Right? And this is why. As a unified group, this bloodline is the best. They're unified. Solo's the leader. Jacob's the muscle. The other two are the first line of defense. But typically they end up getting beat up, and that's what Jacob's there for. Jacob Fatu is an absolute menace. He's the best wrestler in this whole storyline. He's better than – I believe he's a better wrestler than Roman. Roman's a better talker. He's the GOAT without a doubt. But Jacob Fatu, in terms of pure in-the-ring movement and wrestling, Jacob Fatu's the best, right? I'm not saying that Solo's better than Roman. I'm saying as a group, this bloodline is more unified and is better. It's stronger. It's more believable as a heel. Never once did I fully believe in the bloodline story that the actual – because we cheer for Roman, right? We cheered for Jimmy. We cheered for – especially when Sammy got involved, right? Once – right? And no one's ever cheering for Solo, the Tongans, and Jacob. No one's ever going to cheer for that. Right? I believe they're the strongest, most dangerous version of the bloodline. But long-term story of Roman Reigns, right? So now he gets what he's always wanted. We want Roman. He gets the acknowledgement of the fans. But now he's in tribal warfare. And he doesn't – and notice one other thing. His group is not united. It's been fractured. He still doesn't trust Jay. He definitely doesn't trust Sammy. Jimmy's sort of in a position where he's got to try to play mediator, and there's missing one thing. Roman has to make decisions because he doesn't have a wise man. And so Roman's real weak because, again, if you notice – some trends in this story. When Roman doesn't have backup, he's beatable. When he doesn't have backup or when the numbers game isn't in his favor, he loses, just like at WrestleMania against Cody Rhodes. Or he gets pinned like Jey Uso pinned him. Or he almost loses like at Clash at the Castle where Drew McIntyre almost beat him until Solo showed up and debuted. Right? But Roman he's a narcissist. Michael Cole did a very good job on commentary on selling this, right? That Roman Reigns is your classic narcissist. He thinks the world revolves around him, this character. Not Joanne and I. Joanne and I, he's a great person, right? But I have to say that because there's people who will hear this and can't distinguish character from. And the casual audience is very good at doing this, but there will be some hardcore fans who hear this and are like, no, he's a great family man. Guys, I'm talking about the character, not the actual guy, right? But Roman Reigns, the character, is the classical standard narcissist who the world revolves around him, right? And he can't stand the fact, and this is where we get into the current story, he can't stand the fact that Jay went out and became a star and made and is a star in his own right and will not bow down to Roman Reigns anymore. But ultimately what this is going to do is when this group gets united, when they get united and Jimmy and Jay and Roman are on the same picture, like they will be at War Games, they will win the match. But until they're united, Roman Reigns is going to get beat down. And ultimately what I think will happen is this is when The Rock gets inserted. The Rock's the one controlling the new bloodline. Solo's been answering to someone else. He's the tribal chief, but he has even someone that he answers to, and that's the final boss. And that's what Roman's going to beat this group, but then he thinks he's back in control, and that's when the final boss gets on the scene, right? That's when the final boss comes in the picture, right? And so 100%, man, this story's picking up and coming towards Mania. This thing's going to be hot, dog. This is going to be a great story, right? There's a five-dimensional type story going on here in terms of the long-term story of Roman Reigns. Some of the things that are happening. Why is Roman eating pins? Well, because he doesn't have that defense that he used to have. Why is Roman looking like everyone's like, oh, they're making Roman look like a bitch? No, Roman needs help. Roman's always needed help, though. This is very consistent with the story that's been painted, right? Of Roman Reigns' character. Roman's had to come back and beat people into submission and gaslight them into to doing whatever he tells them to do. Right? And when that doesn't happen, he loses. Because he's not as good as he thinks he is. And all the one thing he's always wanted is the crowd recognition, and now he's got it, right? Because the crowd's cheering his name. The crowd's acknowledging him. But the family split, right? And so this is some deep stuff, man. This is deep storytelling. You can make movies out of this, right? But overall, it's great to just to see so many people having fun in an area where they don't typically get to see this, right? I can't wait to see what we have for the rest of 2024. I thoroughly actually enjoyed Crown Jewel. Minus the U.S. title match, didn't really care about that one. And how long Gunther versus Cody was really the only negative to me. Outside of that, solid show. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. I will. But with that being said, y'all, thank y'all for listening and or watching this Crown Jewel reaction video episode of the Slapping Me Wrestling podcast. As a reminder, we will not have any episodes on the 5th or the 8th this week. Nothing will be recorded. We're going to take this week off. We will see you guys back on the... The 15th is Friday. There will be a solo episode on the 15th, but the next episode of the podcast will be on the 12th. Tuesday the 12th is the next time we will see you guys, me and Wavy D. Not quite certain what we'll talk about yet. I'll probably recap what's been going on Raw and SmackDown and reset there. Round 2 of Thirsty Tuesday will start then. And until then, though, thank you guys for watching and listening. Like, share, subscribe, share with all your friends. Tell everyone that you know that likes wrestling or even that maybe doesn't like wrestling. See if we can convince them into liking wrestling. Until then, though, y'all enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Have a great week next week. And we'll see you on the next one. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping Me Wrestling every Tuesday.